The John Schneider Show on Wyman and Bob every Thursday until draft day with Seahawks President of Football Operations, John Schneider.
Well, it is draft day. It is finally here, Dave. We have arrived. We are safe and sound. We got the man who's got the plan sitting right next to us. He's going to unveil everything for us. Right now, we've had so much fun talking to him each and every week. He is the one, the only John Schneider, president of football operations and general manager of your Seattle Seahawks. How are you, man? How you feeling?
I feel good. Yeah.
Good.
You look relaxed. You look rested.
Yeah.
Well rested.
Yeah. Last week was not so much. Yeah.
No. Did you?
I told you. I was thinking of you guys right away. I got up. I'm like, why am I awake?
It's our fault.
Those guys did it to me.
We apologize.
Yeah. All good.
Did you sleep last night?
Great,
do you feel like? All my ducks are in a row. All my plans are in place.
Yeah, everything's just totally buttoned up. We're ready to go. We got the whole trip. As much as we can. And, you know, got up this morning, went to Mass with my brother and my sister and prayed on it. My sister, my wife. My sister's not here.
Oh.
My brother is here. Bill and Tracy, and they dropped me off, and I've literally been on the phone ever since, just kind of like getting caught up. Because to your point last week, you don't really know like necessarily how serious people are week, 2 weeks out. And so okay, now even you're this much closer today, it's like, okay, they are serious about moving or they're not. And, you know, trying to find those safe landing zones, if you will, if things kind of go a certain way.
You know that there's going to be surprises today, right?
Yep.
So
yeah.
when you start thinking about the day, how many different scenarios are there, or do you just have to in that moment react and just go to this, that? Are you confident about that part of it?
Well, this one is, you can try to plan more for this one with scenarios. You know, I was sitting with Mike last night and, you know, going through it the first time with him, and it was pretty cool. He's like, yeah, it's actually like game prep, right? You know, you're like, if this happens, then we go here. If that happens, we go here.
Yeah.
If we can't go here, we go there. That's the put that, you know, you're going through all these different scenarios, and how far back do you go, or, you know, or how far up do you go? Sorry, I didn't mean to say back. No, anyway, neither here nor there. But yeah, just playing out those different scenarios. Now, when it gets to, you know, really the last, you know, the third round, fourth round, the rest of the way, it is reactionary. You're like, okay.
Yeah.
Now you got to really think on your feet, because it's way too many scenarios to go through.
Right. Have you ever had a situation where it went completely haywire in front of you to a point where you were sitting there going, well, now what do we do?
Yeah.
Like it just went so opposite of anything you anticipated.
Yeah, absolutely. Totally.
So,
yeah. No, honestly, it happens. It happened to us. Now it's like by round, right? Sorry. By
GMs
round.
Are bugging him so, right now.
Yeah.
You got to take that call.
I do, actually.
Should we get Dave on the horn?
No,
here? He can negotiate.
No. It's by round. And so last year we were literally like, okay, we would have had to go a round down. We were ready to pick, but we would have had to go a round down. And Willie was able to, like, we were literally on the clock, and Willie was able to work something out with Denver. So then we traded with Denver. But we were like, okay, we're forcing the guy here. To your point, like,
yeah,
you know, we're pushing this guy. We know we're pushing him around. So thank God we didn't have to do that.
Yeah, are there GMs that you don't really? I mean, you probably know. You obviously know who is the GM, but like, are there guys that you don't really know that well that, you know, will call you, and it's kind of a new thing, right?
I
mean, you know John Lynch, right?
Right.
Assuming Howie Roseman, guys like that,
right.
But there are guys that, you know, every once in a while you'll get a call from and like, oh, this is the first time we've spoken.
Yeah, not necessarily the first time we've spoken, but, you know, on this playing field, you know, where you're kind of like, all right, well, what are we just talking about the weather, or are we talking about the game last night, or what do we want to talk about the trade stuff? You know? Like, are we going to get going on that, or are we going to,
you know,
everybody has like different ways of doing it. Some guys are much more clear when they just text you, you know, and then, you know, you can get on text and then, you know, kind of finish things up a little later. So, it's just newer people, you know, and with that, even if I don't necessarily know the general manager, just somebody in the building that I know has a, you know, direct line to the general manager or whoever's making the picks.
Yeah. How different
if at all, was it going into this draft without Pete? You guys have been this team for 14 years.
I've thought about it several times a day. It's wild. It was a place of time, and Pete enjoyed the hell out of it, and it was fun. He made the process very, very fun. We haven't had quite as many deep dives as he called them. Let's go do another deep dive. You know, like
come on,
like,
Johnny.
Yeah, exactly. We've watched the Ohio State Michigan game 740 times now. You know, no, but like the activity, the brain, all that. You know, yeah, I was thinking about it this morning, but you know, I'd be on the phone, like, you know, talking to an agent or another team or something, and he just come right in, the, you know, pop right in there, like, what's his name from Seinfeld, you know, and just come busting right, get Kramer, just come busting right through the door. Hey, who are you talking to? I'm like, hey, hey.
None of your business.
It's just been, I think the coaching staff's done a phenomenal job because, you know, they've been putting their processes in, and then also, you know, spending time interviewing the players, so, you know, you could tell the teachers, the level of teachers that we have here with the Zoom calls and the different philosophies, different ideas, different ways of teaching, and then the job they did with their evaluations, and then, you know, spending the time that we did, you know, in the draft room together, you know, last weekend was phenomenal, working with those guys and getting to know them. And then, you know, those guys understanding as well, like what our board looks like, how it works, the philosophy of it, and, you know, what everything entails. With the acquisition on the draft weekend.
Have you ever had a situation where you get a big disagreement between coaches, and I'm sure you have meetings about how you want to collaborate, but you've got your scouts.
Oh, yeah.
And then you got your coaches, and they're going to have different opinions, right?
Yeah.
That occurs every once in a while?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And we have a system that we work through with it. You know, it's like, all right, well, you see in here, this is the way we see it. Now we're going to sit down and, you know, do some more studies, sit down and, like, you know, Mike and I'll go through it, or coordinators and, you know, the, Trent and Nolan and Matt and Aaron and those guys, we'll all just study it again. So we're studying some stuff, yesterday afternoon. It was like, all right, that was later on draft, like later draft stuff, yeah. But stuff we need to get buttoned up. And yeah. Cause you want to have the buy-in, you know, you want to have everybody on board and ready to roll. So, it's just a communication piece. It's listening, and it's understanding, trying to put yourself. It's like a negotiation, right? You're trying to put yourself in the other person's shoes, and you know, the worst thing you can do is draft a player. You know, it's happened in the past. You know, we drafted a player or two that, you know, we didn't, and, you know, I should have known better. Like, you know, they didn't really have the position coaches buy in, mm-hmm. And then, you know, they're just not going to coach the player as hard.
It seems like the conversation around this draft is, all right, this is John's first solo mission, even though it's not solo. Obviously, everybody's involved, but there's a different focus on you now. Like, all right, who's got more pressure, John or McDonald? And it seems like most people point to you because your first solo ride, if you will, without Pete, who was such a big presence. Do you feel that at all? Do you get any sense of, okay, I got to make this count to show what I do here?
I don't. You know, we've been doing it for 15 years, and like I've said over and over again, Pete was phenomenal about turning it over. And in those, you know, 14 drafts that we did together, there was probably maybe 8 times where he was like, well, I don't, you know, like while we were going, I was like, I don't see it like that at all. And I kind of agree with this. And it's like, all right, well, if that's the case, then, you know, we're not going to do that. We're not going to head that way. So, I don't really. And Mike's a really clear, concise communicator. I think you guys will find that the more time you spend with him.
Do you think teams overreact and sort of panic when it comes to quarterbacks a little bit? I mean, that seems to be kind of a wild card, because people are going to draft, you know, maybe panic that, hey, it's not a good class next year or the year after that. You see that?
Yeah, it's important to study the class next year, right? So everybody's, you know, been doing that. I'm sure every club's evaluated that as well and what that looks like. And, you know, you could try to do it, but you don't necessarily know, because we spend so much time with these guys throughout the evaluation process. But by the time you get there, you don't, you know, like, okay, you think, like, we think we have all these guys figured out, but really we still don't when they come in the door. Like, we're still evaluating them. We're still going to be figuring them out. You know, we're going to still be figuring out how Mo can help them, and Soup and the trainers and the coaches and how they learn. We're still going to be learning these guys. So when you get into, like, especially like quarterbacks, Do people push them? Yeah, absolutely, because it's the premium position. And, you know, we've found, too, that, and obviously you've noticed it since we've been here, and not and only picking two quarterbacks, is when you do move a lot or you give up a lot to go get somebody, it's a double whammy when it doesn't work out. You know, it's like it really sets the organization back. So you have to be really clear with it. But you also can't, if you have a guy, you can't be too, cute or whatever, and trying to move around because the player should be picked in this area or that area, you know, because of what? Like, because ESPN says they should or whatever, you know what I mean? Like, it's like, if you like the player, it's your board, it's your organization, go for it.
One of the things we were talking about this past week is looking at the 2021 draft. Of the first five quarterbacks taken, four have been traded. Wow. When you look at it now, do you go, man, I thought this guy was going to be a star, this guy, or do you feel like, I kind of saw that then?
Receiver class, too, right? That was a good receiver class, right? That was Chase and those guys as well.
Yeah. Comparing so Trevor Lawrence is the only one.
Trevor Lawrence guys to this year's, like, that's kind of how people are.
Well, I'm just curious, as you get removed from remove yourself a couple years down the road and you look at it going, yeah, that makes sense, or wow, I'm really surprised that's how that turned out.
It's a combination. Like, what was the situation? What kind of offense were they put in? What organization did they go to? You know, where was the guy? Was too much pressure put on the guy? Could they wait? You know, it's always like, you know, can a guy sit and learn? We just, you know, we're in this world of like instant gratification, and you know, these guys have to be put out there, and you know, you draft a guy, you better put him out there and he better perform. Well, you know, I get back to the NFL Europe days. I mean, those guys were, you know, several of those guys are winning Super Bowls. Like, they need time to play. They need the reps, and they need pro reps. So, you know, the Brad Johnsons and Kurt Warner and Mark Bulgers and, you know, JT O'Sullivan and all those guys, like Jeff Garcia, those guys got to, you know, they got to go play the game. And these guys need that too. Now, in this draft, you know, Bo Nix, Penix, Daniels, you know, there's guys that have played a lot of football. Mm-hmm.
Hey, so I remember
a really long-winded answer.
No,
jeez,
that was all good.
Rambling man here.
This is
today.
The John
Rambling
Schneider man. Show. You talk as much as you want to.
Don't use up all your words now. Okay. What about you have a notebook that you would, you know, write in every, like a diary, basically.
Yep.
You're still doing that.
Yes.
On a day like this, do you go back and look through, or do you already know?
I talked to Mike about it last night. Like what it looks like where, you know, okay. The middle of the second round is going to be a lonely, lonely time, especially if we don't pick up a second pick, right? Like, that's going to be, and how the board, it just disappears in front of you. You're kind of like, everyone is just like a, you know, bang, bang. You spend so much time evaluating these guys and the scouts, like everything that goes into it, all the investment, the money that goes into it, the man hours that are put into this. It's such a, and our people do such an amazing job. I love our staff so much. And so to see those guys leave, it's like, okay, well, that was great. I spent 15 days in Tallahassee trying to get that guy figured out. And he just left. So the way they disappear is kind of like, all right, comes off and it hurts.
Just like a body blow each time. Like, oh, he's gone.
Yeah, it really is. But getting back to like reading and be like, all right, cool. Things settled down in the third round. They started going our way in the fourth round. You know, we were able to kind of move around, and we were able to manipulate the board better this year because we had this amount of numbers and a certain round and that sort of thing. Yeah.
I'm guessing when you hired Coach McDonald, you knew his philosophy, the kind of players he likes, but I'm wondering how much more you learned just figuring out differences between how you evaluate players, how much you guys have in common as you've gone through this process.
Yeah, it's a great question, and it's ongoing. We're continuing to do it. We're still learning each other. We're still, figuring out, you know, what it looks like. But I would say he has this like real, like, he knows exactly what he wants, but it's also, he's a very like I don't want to say pliable, if pliable is the right way, but he can adjust, and he can literally he gets it. He's a good listener, but he knows exactly what he wants.
You know, it's funny. Everybody's concentrating on the first round guys, pretty much first and second. But and where you build your roster and where you kind of make your hay is in the late rounds, right? I mean, you've had some, KJ in the fourth, I think it was Cam. We were going through it yesterday, and Why do you think you have been so successful with some of those late round picks? Is it sticking to your process, or
I think the guys, the scouts, the studying, and then the buy-in from the coaches and the development. Are you going to spend the time to develop the players? If everybody buys in, if the area scout has conviction and has been through the process with the individual, and then the coach, then we all vet it together, and then. Then the coaches come in, and then if you have the conviction of the coaches, you know, at a certain spot, everybody's just kind of all in. Everybody wants to take care of that player and have that player develop. And, you know, again, they need the reps. They need the opportunities. And so, you know, I tell the guys all the time, like especially the local visit we have, it's like, yeah, the first round is Thursday night. It's like this big entertainment thing. It's awesome. Get it. Congratulations. You got drafted in the first round. That's awesome. Then you got Friday night, round two, round three. And then Saturday, to your point, Dave, is really like when, like, that's when you make your hay. And, you know, that's like the blood and guts of it. It's like awesome. Like finishing the draft, you know, adjusting the board for rookie free agency, which is like a whole nother draft in itself. That's like incredibly sped up. And then, like, on Sunday, they make people, you know, the guys like yourself make fun of guys like me. You know, give us, like,
we would never.
F's and D's and all that, whatever,
we would
that kind
never.
Of stuff. And then, but I tell the guys, I'm like, yeah, and then Monday they're talking about next year's class already. So you guys need to flip your mind to get ready to be competing with grown men because, like, in our case, these guys have been here working for 3 weeks. They're 3 weeks ahead of you. And they're going to be relying on you guys to, you know, lift their competitive level up as well. So they go through this process of like enjoying like, okay, cool. Like how am I getting acquired? I got drafted, which must be an amazing thing. But then also like, okay, I got to flip my mind to get back into football mode, not like 40 mode or short shuttle mode or interview mode. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like it happens really quick for them.
Yeah.
You know, it takes longer for some of these guys. I mean, they're 21 years old. Like I don't know how I would have handled that.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I would have handled an $8 million signing bonus at 21 years old.
Yeah. How'd you handle it, Dave?
Yeah, how would it go?
Well, I'll let you know when I make that money.
The thing we always hear about this league, it's a copycat league.
Yeah.
Copycat league. Does that apply to the draft, do you think? Because and I'm thinking specifically of somebody like Brock Purdy or even Russell Wilson, somebody who's looked at as undersized or they don't have the cannon arm and they're taking late, third round, seventh round for Purdy, obviously, last pick in the draft. Do you think that shifts the way clubs, GMs might approach drafting a quarterback going, well, they did it. We could do that too.
Great question. I think it's cyclical, you know. I mean, I think it goes in waves. Right now, running backs, you know, it's kind of like, oh, you know, you can get a running back. I mean, I don't know if that's necessarily the case. You know, we've taken running backs in the second round 2 years in a row because we had those guys just rated so high. They were just like, oh, those got good players, you know. But, yeah, I think, you know, then – other teams, you know, compare to your point, they compare the Brock Purdy's or, you know, well, that was, you know, this guy kind of reminds me of Brock Purdy. Okay, well, if he reminds you of Brock Purdy, then don't draft him in the seventh round. Like, you know, you might want to take him in the second if that's the case, you know, like, God helps those who can't help themselves. I mean, sometimes we stumble into stuff, you know, so, but people can say that, right? Well, you can get a guy later, you know, or this, but then, you know, you just have to have conviction for that player. But to your point, the copycat part of it with the draft is really kind of like it goes in waves. Like, okay, like we'll probably see in a couple more years, you know, the importance of the running back coming back game because people aren't tackling anymore and, you know, like the tackling's falling off. And okay, so these guys are going to stand out more. We need more runners and maybe we get away from playing 7-on-7 and, you know, more hard, like old school football.
I remember when you drafted Richard Sherman, I had a buddy from Stanford, and I was like, what's he doing drafting Richard Sherman? Yeah, yeah. I mean, that was such a great get. I mean, I thought he was the best tackling corner in NFL history. I mean, he would hit you, man.
It was full buy-in from everybody.
Yeah.
You know, the our West Coast scout I'm trying to remember who was at the time. I apologize, but like West Coast to the area, to the over the top guy, to the coordinator, to the position coach, to the head coach, everybody had this buy-in. It was like, you know, this guy's going to be a player. And he felt that confidence. Obviously, he had it already, you know, and then he just had that incredible swag about him.
Yeah.
And that just rubbed off on, you know, the whole rest of the team, really. I mean, that everything he exuded, but that's so fun to talk about. I could talk about that sort of stuff all day. I love those stories, you know, like, well, such a big get for us, you know?
Yeah. Well, you've had so many of them, though. I mean, like we talked about, even free agent. I mean, Doug Baldwin is a free agent.
Doug Baldwin's one of the most underrated receivers in NFL history, man.
Well, he's one of the greatest in the history of this organization. Yeah, he's a free agent. And Sherm, a fifth rounder. Tariq Woolen, a fifth rounder.
Yeah.
Cam,
Stanford,
KJ.
Guys.
Yeah, that's probably what it was.
No, but you're right, Cam, KJ. I mean,
just late round picks. That, yeah. And you look at these guys as all-time Seahawk greats.
Yep, and I would say it's the buy-in from, like, the staff to, like, everybody's bought in. Everybody's like, okay.
What does that mean?
Buy-in from the coaching staff with the scouts. Like, okay, cool. I really like this guy.
We're going to trust your evaluation.
Yeah, and they're like, okay, well, you trust evaluation. And you know what? Like, I really like my interview with him. Like, this is going to be great. I can work with this guy. Let's go. I can't wait to coach him. And so that's, you know, we're learning the staff right now. We're okay. Do you like the guy or do you like the guy? You can love your pets. You just can't love your pets, you know? That's kind of like, that's a Robin Williams. That's from a movie. I forget. Anyway.
Yeah.
That was my movie line for the day.
Oh, you got it. Any rituals on this day that are tried and true? Every year you have, remember last year you had the gas station attendant?
We have the gas station shirts for the third day because that's like our ultimate work day. That's like the greasy, grimy, get busy day. We hand those out. We just handed three new ones out upstairs to our interns and stuff. So
okay,
yeah.
So anything other than that, I know you went to mass. Your brother's here.
Yeah, just you know, praying on it, and then getting everybody together, and just have some alone time before it starts. Had some alone time last night, and then just ready. It's a big process. I mean, it's so wild that, like, you know, we're doing this like. Today, I'm thinking, like, okay, that's here already. Let's go. But, I mean, now it's like you're sitting here thinking about all the time that went into it and what everybody's done. And I'm just so proud of everybody and so thankful, so grateful to everybody in the whole building.
Well, and the other thing to me that's fascinating is that there's some kid sitting somewhere and you're about to determine his life, basically.
Yeah.
Because, you know, if the Seahawks hadn't picked me, I wouldn't have met Shannon. I wouldn't have, you know, my whole life
That's what Tracy was talking about after mass today. She was like, you know, she was like, I was just praying about, like, all these families that, like everybody in the National Football League is going to be affecting tonight and, you know, throughout the weekend. I mean, it's just like, how does that, like think about that. Isn't that overwhelming? I'm like, it's not overwhelming at all, babe.
It's more pressure.
It's that kind of day. Yes. My back's really hurting, Trace.
There wasn't enough pressure there. Yeah. You're making breaking lives here. Perfect.
Yeah, no,
perfect.
But I just think about, like, and to think about, you know, like, how blessed we are to be doing this. And, like, I was so into it as a kid. Like the entertainment part of it now is huge. Yeah. I mean, when they're going to cities, like, they're going to the draft, they're, you know, I mean, it's amazing, and it's just a great weekend. I mean,
yeah. Last one before we let you go, I'm sure the worst calls you make or conversations when you're letting somebody go.
But yeah.
Is I got to imagine up
that's
at the top what,
yeah,
is,
that
is calling a draft pick saying, hey, so-and-so, we're going to pick you next year.
Yeah.
I mean, that for you has got to be.
Yeah, that's the best.
The best.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. It's just like.
I mean, tears going, hearing that reaction on the other
end.
You
can hear the families in the background, like, you know.
What was it, maybe one of your favorite? I mean, I know DK broke down. Like, what took you so long? I think it was.
KJ was whispering because he was about to go across the stage. So he's, like, talking real quiet like this. I was like, we're getting ready to draft you right here, man. Like, everything okay? He's like, I'm at my graduation. And he was literally, like, getting ready to go across the.
Oh, he's
really?
Oh,
yeah, man. That was an awesome one. Yeah, some guys just, like, you know, some guys are super quiet, you know, like, they don't really say much. I'm like, expecting you to be a little bit more excited.
Yeah.
You know, like,
do you want to play here?
Yeah. I mean, we didn't turn it in yet.
We could change our minds.
Yeah.
That is awesome. Well, John, it's been fun talking to you.
Yeah, no, I appreciate you guys. It's been great.
This is awesome.
Been awesome.
We wish you obviously the best.
I'll come on and BS with you guys sometime when, like, when you're doing a baseball game again or something.
Let's do a recap of the draft.
Sure, we'll do it.
All right.
All right.
There you go. There's John Schneider. We're going to come back, weigh in on our final pre-draft conversation with the Seahawks GM and president of football operations as we continue live from the Virginia Mason Athletic Center. It's Wyman and Bob, Seattle Sports on 710.
You're listening to the 2024 NFL Draft. Hear reaction to every Seahawks pick on Seattle Sports and streaming live on the Seattle Sports app.
Well, the draft hasn't started officially. Wyman and Bob here live from the Virginia Mason Athletic Center. Our thanks to John Schneider, who joined us in the previous segment. Maybe our final. We'll see if we can get him in for a wrap-up. We put that out there, planted the seed. Hopefully he'll join us after the draft, and we can go through and get his thoughts on everything that took place and how much of it was according to plan and how much they had to adjust. But pretty fascinating time is you know, his first go around without Pete. Talked a lot about that. Obviously, he's got very high praise for Pete, but this is a whole different dynamic. Brand new coaching staff. He and McDonald. It's going to be interesting to see how things go in the war room. If there's passion about one player and he's got passion for another player, how all of that's going to shake out?
Yeah, well, I think the thing about John is he's a football junkie. He just loves it. So I mean, yeah, there's lots of pressure, but I don't think he even thinks about that. I think he's just having a blast. Yeah. I mean, he's running the show. He's going to run the draft and just putting together. I mean, that's probably something he dreamed about when he was a little kid. Well, he probably dreamed about being in the NFL as a running back, but that didn't work out for him. But I think he's up to it, and I'll be really, really curious to see this year with all the new coaches. I mean, there's so many question marks, and we're just not used to that around here. It's been 14 years, you know, where you had Pete and John.
Yeah, I mean, as much as it's an adjustment for everybody in this building, it's an adjustment for the fan base. You kind of knew what you got with Pete. We got used to parsing Pete and their dynamic with each other. You know, Pete and John up there doing their you know, post-pick press conference. They go out there and speak to the media, and that's been the case for 14 years. So this sort of officially is the beginning of the new era, the first major moves, if you will, under the new head coach out there. And we'll see how different things look. I mean, I don't know. My opinion, has your opinion changed in terms of what you think they're going to do at 16? I know a lot of it will depend on what happens in front of them. That'll dictate a lot of what they may or may not do. But just the idea that they pick at 16 or they don't, they move. Either up or down. They could move up.
Well,
seems less likely, but
my prediction would be this, that there is going to be kind of a run on the quarterbacks.
Yeah.
And I think all six are going to be gone by the time they get to 16. So that could really help the Seahawks if there's, you know, a couple of guys that fall a little bit. I think the safest bet is Troy Fautanu. I think at number 16, I think that's, and I know Bucky Brooks has that same thing, just incredibly gifted. And I was talking with the morning show this morning with Brock and Salk, and you know, like within 3 years, you've got two first rounders at offensive tackle or, you know, possibly guard. But that's, I mean, you build this team through the, you know, with the trenches in mind, and you know, with that pick right there, I mean, incredible feat. And Brock and I were talking about it. We both kind of made a comparison to Walter Jones, and that's just because of his feet mostly and his hands and everything. But he's a pretty special player. So it's not a sexy pick, but I think that would be my, you know, my most likely to happen. I think it's going to look like that. The other thing, I think Rome Odunze might be the first wide receiver taken because they have Malik Nabers and they have Harrison Jr. in front of him. And I feel like the NFL values him a little bit more than the mock drafters do.
Yeah, you said that would be a bit of an upset. I mean, I would love to see that happen for him. I'm still convinced that Harrison Jr. will be the first wide receiver off the board, and everybody, you know, every mock we've looked at, which at this point has got to be at least 100, has him going number 4 to the Arizona Cardinals. We'll see, you know, if they move out of that pick, if they move out of that spot or not. I think Odunze has the chance to ultimately become the best wide receiver out of this draft. He may not be the first one picked, but if we start looking at numbers 5 years from now, 8 years from now, I could easily see him atop that list, above Nabers, above Harrison Jr. We'll see what happens there. But back to the O-line, you're right. It's not a sexy pick, but I think most fans at this point are pretty dialed into the fact you need this. Yeah, it's not a quarterback. It's not a wide receiver. It's not that, you know, that player that's going to fill up the stat sheet. It's a guard. It's somebody you're going to have in the interior of your own line. But I think we've watched enough of this line struggle, and I think most fans get it. This is a necessity, and if you've got a difference maker at one of those spots and somebody who is obviously very familiar to people around here playing for UW, I don't think there'd be any blowback, certainly, if they did go with Fautanu. And I'm with you. I think that's, like, if there are Vegas odds on which player they were going to take, that would be the favorite.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and yeah, I think what was the most interesting thing you heard from John today? I'll start. I thought that when he talked about the man hours that get put into every player, mm-hmm. and just the, you know, he's the guy pulling the lever, you know, eventually. And that's because, you know, some scout has put in like hundreds of hours into these guys. And, you know, I was talking about this when I go through and do my little profile. It takes like 45 minutes, man. I mean, to look at their tape and look at the combine and took it, you know, and these scouts are having to travel down there. The other thing was that, you know, you're changing people's lives. That's always been really interesting to me and fascinating because, you know, you're sitting wherever you are in the country and there's a room full of coaches with chewing tobacco and, you know, they're sitting there with their snacks and they're, you know, making these decisions that are entirely changing some young man's life, you know, as to where he lives out. Look, for me, I wouldn't have been here in Seattle. I wouldn't be sitting here with you, Bob. That's the one thing that I really worry about.
That'd be the biggest hole in your life.
Yeah, absolutely. But no, I mean, it's just, it's fascinating. And then also just all that time that you put into that, it, you know, can pay off later if the guy's a free agent or whatever. But I wonder what that feels like for scouts that put all that time into these guys. And it's like, they're not going to take my guy here.
Yeah, it's got to be a bit of a gut punch. And he talked about, you know, seeing this guy go off the board or that guy go off the board. And you're like, oh,
yeah,
dang. You feel like you probably got to know these guys. And maybe some are part of your 30 visits. You never know mm-hmm. which guys he's referring to. But, you know, it informs them down the road. You talk about whether they get drafted or not. Also, if they become available down the road where, you know, Drew Lock.
Yeah.
Drew Lock was a guy they talked about. We loved him in the draft. We loved him. They did all their work on him. So they had a working knowledge of him when he became available and they could, right. you know, get him in this trade and everything. So, yeah, moments like that, they already come in. They're not coming in blind. They're like, oh, yeah, we had conversations. We studied all the tape on this guy coming out of the draft. So they're already in the know.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure that's the case with Leonard Williams. Also, because, you know, I've heard that John has been interested in him in a long time, you know, for a long time. So it's probably a guy they were close to drafting and, you know, always thought it would be good to sign a guy like that. So you already know all the background.
All right. Coming up, we'll set the stage for the draft with our final predictions for the first round. All of that coming your way. It's Wyman and Bob live from the Virginia Mason Athletic Center. This is Seattle Sports on 710.
You're listening to the 2024 NFL Draft. Hear reaction to every Seahawks pick on Seattle Sports and streaming live on the Seattle Sports app.
We're about 15 minutes away from round one kicking off in the 2024 NFL Draft. It's Wyman and Bob live from the Virginia Mason Athletic Center here, Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com. We'll have our other analysts, Brock Huard, Michael Bumpus, joining us at the top of the hour. So stay tuned for that as we watch all the pre-draft festivities out there in Detroit, Dave. It looks like there are hundreds of thousands of people outside all bunched together to watch names be called.
Yeah, it's very strange.
And this is where you and I really kick in with our keen fashion eye and assess what everybody's wearing as they were having some of the bigger names come out, Caleb Williams and Marvin Harrison Jr. and Roma Dunze coming out on stage. Everybody's got their...
Well, I mean, I think you and I, our standards are you pretty much should buy all your clothes from Costco. That's really, I mean, anything over that is just wasteful.
Yeah, you know, so I definitely got socks and underwear at Costco going right
definitely,
now.
Definitely got that done. That or Nordstrom Rack.
Rack. Yeah, their clothes tend to squeak.
But Brennick said my dad shops there. Like, well, I am pretty much your dad. I mean, I could be anyway. So, it's interesting. Just all the fanfare that's going along with, like you said, they're really just calling names. Yeah. That's what they're all there to watch. It's fascinating to me. And the people that are all just jammed in whatever that street or plaza is there, they're just standing there, just watching. And, yeah, it's amazing what the NFL has done, especially with this event. But, I mean,
it's bigger every year.
Yeah.
Every year it gets bigger. And I was telling Stacy, who was in here earlier, for 7 years in a row, I went to the NFL draft, but it was in New York every single year. That was before they were moving it around. So it was in the theater at Madison Square Garden, and then they moved it to Radio City Music Hall, which, you know, is a few thousand, but you see this. And even back then, the commitment from some of these fans to represent their team is unlike anything I can relate to, because there are guys that are in full makeup, full uniform, some kind of bear head on them if they're a Bears fan, some kind of or a football helmet. I saw guys even back then in like 06, 05 that were head to toe, helmet, eye black, wristband, shoulder pads, pads in the pants, cleat, the whole thing. And they'd be standing in line waiting to
come
in.
Were they taped up too? Taped up wrists and
they
ankles.
They might have been. They had the wristbands on. They had gloves on. They had the whole thing. I mean, like, you're going to, and they would be there each day of the draft. I'm like, you're wearing that every day, and you're going to sit here for hours with a helmet on your head and sit in a theater.
Yeah, the NFL just, they nail it. I mean, everything. You're seeing people in the stands for the combine now. I don't know exactly they're selling tickets or whatever, but I feel like they could get that to the point where they might actually fill up that entire stadium. But the other thing, we talked about this a little bit, is just, you know, these young men who are about to have their lives changed, you know, when you get picked. I remember for me, my brother had ESPN, and because he lived down in the city in Reno, and we were out in the boondocks, so we all went and spent the night at my brother's little condo, slept on the floor,
huddled
and,
around his TV
waiting for the, you know, and then a call comes when Green Bay was on the clock and it's the Seahawks, and whole life changed. So yeah, it's a, that to me is really, really kind of cool that, you know, somebody's going to entirely, you know, the path, because, you know, typically you go to college, you get, you know, all the skills, and then you sort of interview and you decide on your own. In this case, you're getting selected, you know, if it's Cleveland or Detroit or, you know, could anywhere in the country. I mean, you got to go.
Was there even a thought when you got drafted of being there? Was that even an option, or somebody present that to you, or were you like
being where?
Being there at the draft.
Oh. Yeah, I don't know. No, that wasn't. Well, I was a second round projection, so I think, you know. But they don't need second rounders there.
Yeah. No. it's just the pomp and circumstance is unbelievable. Yeah. It gets bigger every year. I'll really be interested to see when they get the final numbers. You know, when it's all done, they'll talk about how many people actually attended. But it's an ocean of people out there. And luckily, it looks like it's a good weather day.
Well, the other thing that has increased rapidly is the mock drafts.
Oh, yeah.
And I know you've gotten into it. And it's fun. It's fun to look at and just see where your team's going to, who they're going to get. Are they going to trade back? Things like. And that's the other thing. They're getting more sophisticated. Like, they're including trades now.
Oh, yeah.
And then they're doing the full thing, you know, and so that's become quite popular. And yeah, so that part of it helps really, I think, support, you know, most people get familiar with these names that are going in the first round anyway.
Well, and one of the things, you know, we talked about some of the more common names we saw attached to the Seahawks throughout all these mock drafts. One of the common trade partners I saw in these mock drafts, and it doesn't mean it's going to happen, but was them trading back with the Eagles. Philly, and then we saw that article come out on the Eagles saying, hey, they are trying to trade up. Maybe so that would be the one area I would just am curious to keep an eye on. Like, all right, is there anything to that? Is that coincidence that, you know, the any time a trade was proposed that involved the Seahawks, it seemed like in the mocks we were looking at, it was with the Eagles. So something just to keep an eye on in that first round, because the Eagles did make it known they're trying to move up. Whether they do or not, who knows? John told us his phone was ringing this morning. He didn't say who was calling him, but our GMs are already
during his interview.
Yeah. I mean, so the GMs are out there already making their phone calls. And
well, and I think that's a guy he's familiar with, Howie Roseman. And I think that does matter. You know, I mean, if it's some guy that you don't know, and I think you can probably get a better deal done if you know the GM that's calling. But I wouldn't be terribly surprised to see them go back. You know, if the guys that like I always say, there's not, according to John, there's not 32 first rounders.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes there's 12, or sometimes there's 16 or 18. And, you know, in that case, if they're picking after that, they're going to move back.
Yeah, right now the Eagles are at 22. So if that, just playing that hypothetical, that's where the Seahawks would go from 16 to 22 if there were anything to. And I wonder those that propose the trades and the mock drafts, if they're just kind of guessing like this makes sense based on needs, and or if they're talking to some people in some of these front offices, they're getting info. It's going to be interesting to watch. I think everybody seems to be pretty dialed in on what the first three picks are going to be, certainly the three quarterbacks, with Williams being number one, and then May and Daniels we've seen flip-flopped in different mock drafts. Mm-hmm. You know, Daniels going second, he's going third and others, so we'll see. But it seems like that's been the most consistent thing in of all of it, is that it's been those three in some order, and then Harrison Jr. going fourth.
Well, you know what the good news is, you know, the top 10 is pretty much quarterbacks and wide receivers, and we've got an ex-quarterback and an ex-wide receiver that are going to be up here chiming in at 5 o'clock. So tell us all about it.
Just dazzling everybody with their expertise and football knowledge. But, yeah, they got the countdown clock on the screen just over 7 minutes ago before the first round, and we'll see Goodell walk out onto the stage. The entire crowd will boo him. That's become tradition to boo him every time he comes out. But they'll do he'll do the introductions, and they'll do all whatever they need to do before he says the Chicago Bears are officially on the clock. So
what are they playing? What are they paying Roger now? Like, is it
40 some million?
Is it 40 million?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think it's 40 something, a little over 40 a year. So, yeah, he's able to pay his bills, which we are all worried about. That's good. I'm glad he's going to be okay financially. So we got the first round of the 2024 NFL draft set to kick off in just over 6 minutes. We're going to bring in Brock Huard, Michael Bumpus with Wyman and Bob here as we continue live from the Virginia Mason Athletic Center.
I'll throw you out of here.
Seattle
Sports. Don't do the clapping thing.
On 710.